and just sharing how you feel, because through my life experience, I realized that bottling feelings and thoughts up is what makes them explode in our head. If you let it go, if you let it out, it's not gonna do as much damage as it does when it stays in your head and it goes around and goes around and goes around and it explodes and then it stains your brain. And then another one comes in and it goes around and it explodes and it stains your brain.
Welcome to Getting Through. I'm Andrea Sonnenberg. Today, I'm speaking with Bajat, an independent musician from Libya. He's overcome many serious personal and systemic challenges, bullying, war, and poverty. These obstacles might have hardened a less thoughtful person, but Bajat has taken all of his experiences and stayed open, constantly learning, growing, and sharing through his art form.
I've been singing my whole life. Like my mom told me, I sang before I talked. There's just something every person says, but you know, I've always been kind of attracted to music and I've always been fascinated by it because I didn't find it easy to say how I felt out loud in words. I could draw it or I could put it into a melody or, you know, in a chord, but I could never say it, you know, just in spoken words.
As a child, Bajat was often bullied and judged because of his weight.
I was extremely obese as a child. I don't even remember hearing, you know, the first time I heard that I need to lose weight and I need to work on my body and my health. It was such a challenge to kind of feel that my worth fluctuated based on my weight. So the more weight I had, the less I felt that I was valuable. Because I heard a lot of backhanded compliments that would be like, oh my God, like you would look so handsome if you lost the weight. Like you would be so good looking. Like I would so like want to date you if you were not that. And so I grew up to kind of feel that I belong in the background and that I should just like, you know, observe and not participate because I wasn't worthy of like, you know, participation until I had lost that weight, which is really sad for a child to think of themselves. But it really did affect the way that I saw the world, the way I participated in the world, and the way that I viewed myself in relation to how strangers would see me. And that led me to not want to go out in the street. I didn't want to hear people saying things, you know, through their car windows, which is something people do. You know, oh my God, the bear is out. Or like, you know, for them, they say it and they think it's funny. And for me, I'm like, I don't want to see people again.
So he spent a lot of time indoors making music and finding friends online.
Other than that, my childhood was pretty normal, you may say. Like we had vacations, we traveled. My family was stable financially. We could go to nice places in the summer and I could get, you know, I could buy a guitar and that is until I was 15 years old. And then it was like the other side of the coin overnight.
The spring of 2011 brought revolution to Libya, which eventually led to war in the region.
A lot of people have this perception that this is what we're used to, or like in our region, this is everyday life, but it really, really isn't. So, you know, experiencing those days where there's like, you go out and there's militia stopping your car, but they're not police. Like, why are they stopping you and asking you where you're going? And, you know, electricity was starting to run out more. And it just felt like, you know, it felt like the beginning of something that was not going to be an easy experience. And so my mom made the quick decision to pack our bags and go. And thankfully, we managed to flee before all the airports were, you know, they stopped the flights between Libya and abroad.
Did you have family members that stayed in Libya?
Yeah.
That must have been really hard.
It really was. And you know, in our cultures, we really value family. We're like, the only times I was not at home, I was at a family's place. So having them be stuck there and like talking to them on the phone and, you know, my aunt telling me, like, you know, this might be the last time that we talk. Like, please know that I love you and please take care of your cousin for me, who was her son. Like, hearing that from the person that you look up to, who's like family to you, you just go, what is happening? Why is it happening? It's just so much to process, like so much loss and potential loss, which is even scarier, you know, living that when you wake up, it's like, are they going to pick up when I call them? Like, is today going to be the day? Like, will they make it? So yeah, most of my family stayed in Libya, and it was, and still is, I mean, not an easy separation.
It's been 11 years since Bajat fled with his family to Malta, initially thinking they would only be gone a few months. Upon arrival, although safe from violence, the circumstances thrust his family into poverty. And living inside so much change and uncertainty made Bajat feel that life was beyond his control.
I was in Malta, and it was around the same time that my dad started being less and less active in our family, and he stopped visiting here in Malta. And my dad's way of showing love is very much shoving food down your throat. So when my dad stopped being there, we were like, oh, like, we don't have to eat pizza every night for dinner. Like, we don't have to have fried foods and sandwiches and chicken wraps and chips. And I was like, you know, I want to try and take charge of my own life, because also at that time, I just felt the need to prove that I had control over something. I really wanted to prove to myself and the people around me, amidst all the things that I had no control over, you know, leaving my home, the war that was happening, not being able to be with my family. I wanted something that I could control. So I set my mind to it. I was like, okay, I want to do music. I want to feel like I'm the best version of myself. I want to feel that I'm doing right to my body and to my health. So I shifted my mindset almost overnight in terms of, like, you know, my decision to lose weight. And like the day after I woke up, I was like, okay, I'm going to go for a walk in the morning. I'm going to cut out all the sugars that I'm eating, all the chips. So I just went for it. And that was like my first lesson in hard work. It's like the more effort I put, the more results I got. And it kind of taught me that this resilience of, like, okay, I'm going to just trust the process, that it's always going to reward me for the action that I put in.
How did life change for you when you lost all that weight?
Oh, yeah, it was eye-opening in so many ways. You know, when I started losing the weight, of course, the first stages were amazing. You're like, every week I go back to uni and people are like, oh my God, you look so different. Oh my God, you look so much better. What happened? Like, are you losing weight? Are you doing this? And I was like, yeah, you know, riding off of that high of constant admiration and compliments and people seeing what I do as an achievement. And then you reach kind of like a point where you're close-ish to the goal, right? And then you kind of stagnate at that point. And then you're like, oh, I put on like 2 kilos this week. And then you kind of torture yourself, because how could you ever do that after losing so much? Because I have, like, as of right now, I've lost 120 kilos, which is 264 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That's like equivalent of like 3 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's just amazing how the brain works, because even though I've lost like all of that, I don't know what it is to live your life. Just you go and you eat and you don't feel guilty. And it's so weird, because even until today, I could, if I have something that in my mind is categorized as unhealthy, I could look completely the same, but I would look in the mirror and I still feel like that 15-year-old, you know, 400 pounds Bajat.
Are you working on getting a comfortable relationship with food?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in a much better place this year and like 2020 and 2021 were kind of like a breakthrough for me, because I think that was the first time where I could actually sit down and live with my new body and kind of think about it, right? Because it throughout the experience of like getting to the goal or whatever, you're always constantly comparing yourself to your, you know, last week you, and what have you achieved since last week? And in 2020, it was the first time where I was like, okay, well, this is it. Like, I can't lose no more weight, but I still don't feel that I've achieved much. And then that's when you start thinking, you're like, okay, maybe it was never about the weight.
What kind of support did you have along the way?
My mom and my siblings have been my main support system. I think fleeing from the war forced us all to kind of get closer together in a different way, because we were sharing life on a whole other level now. It wasn't just like, oh, my homework sucks. It was like, yeah, we really don't have food today. Like, what are we going to do about that? And then you have like a, you know, a table of my mom and then me and my siblings who are all younger than me trying to, you know, scratching our heads. It's like, we've always had everything handed to us. Like, how are we going to, how do we do this? How do we do life? And in that sense, I'm really grateful for the things that happened, because it takes a toll on you. Everything that takes a toll on you gives you a life lesson that you never forget.
Bajat's family eventually built a new life. His mother landed a job teaching Arabic. Bajat and his sister attended university, and his brother found work in the food industry. But Bajat didn't just want to be an observer and found his ambitions were growing.
Malta is really like a tiny island. It's like 400,000 people live here, and I had global ambitions, and I'm a very avid networker online. So I add like so many producers and artists. And I spoke to like the producer of Fleetwood Mac when I was like 17, and he listened to my demo and he was like, oh my God, yeah, keep going. And so once I just saw that there's someone posted that Max Martin, who is my favorite pop producer, was in Sweden, visiting a pop songwriting school. And I was like, oh, what is that school? Like, I need to go there. Like, I need to find out about this. So then I looked it up. I think it had been one day since the deadline for international applications. And I sent them an email and I begged them to let me apply. And I applied and they accepted me. And then I got a Ryanair flight cheaper than a meal. And I put like a backpack and I filled it up as if it was a suitcase. And I went to Sweden up to the north and I attended that academy. And from then onwards, I just kind of built my network there. And yeah, I took Caribbean Sweets with me from Malta and I knocked on all the record labels. And I was like, hi, I'm Bahja. Like, do you wanna talk?
And his hard work and charm have paid off. Today, Bahja lives in Stockholm and has built a significant following. His songs have over 16 million plays across streaming platforms and over 50 million views on YouTube. All this success has prompted offers from record labels, but he prefers to maintain his independence as an artist. So you're so self-aware and you're in tune with what your body needs and sort of how to get to the place that you got to. Did you have professional help?
I've never done therapy myself. What led me to the path of being self-aware is just the whole thing of me being overweight. I was observing a lot. I was looking at people. I was looking at life. So I used to like just watch people and just their reactions and what they said versus how they said it and what they meant with it. And when you kind of take a distance like that, when it comes to your own life, you also start to be able to kind of look at yourself the same way you used to look at other people. So I always attribute my awareness kind of to being able to observe, because I love listening to people. I love listening to stories. I love analyzing things. And it really helped me to be able to get to know myself a bit more.
So you've been through a lot. Did you experience anxiety or depression throughout any of that time? And what was that like?
I'm someone who overthinks a lot, and I'm pretty anxious as a person when it comes to like anticipating things that are not, you know, within my comfort zone. Like I hate being on planes. I hate if I call someone that I love and they're not picking up, my first thought is not like, oh, maybe they're driving, or like maybe they're with a friend. I'm like, something happened. Like, it's kind of like you really, really have to be able to step out of it and kind of have almost like a mantra to be able to calm yourself down and just be like, okay, this is an intrusive thought. Last time this happened, your mom was just at the grocery store and she forgot her phone in the car. Or like, you've been on a plane, you're going to be fine, let it go. And kind of building this relationship where you almost talk to yourself as a third person. So I have dealt with a lot of kind of intrusive thoughts and overthinking and anxiety. And, you know, being in the music industry is not easy. It's not easy to be judged on every aspect of your life, your voice, of your, the way you talk and the way you walk and the way you dress and just being picked apart like you're some sort of like spectacle.
So what are some of your other coping mechanisms besides trying to disrupt these intrusive thoughts? What are other practices that you partake in?
I'll always be grateful for my relationship with music. Music has been, I think music was my coping mechanism before I knew what a coping mechanism meant. I just remember feeling sad that a girl I liked suddenly was not talking to me anymore. And then I was like, I'm gonna write a song about that because I'm sad. And then I would write a song about it. And then the moment I finished the last word of the song, I'm like, I feel so much better. So for me, music and writing, I spent endless hours writing and recording and singing and just hours upon hours upon hours. And from the moment when I was like, you know, a child living a normal life in Libya, through being in poverty, through being 400 and something pounds to being less than half of that, music has always been the way I coped. And the other day I thought about it and I was like, music is the only thing that never cared whether I was overweight or slim, whether I was poor or rich, whether I was alone or with people. The relationship I had with it never changed. It was always there for me when I needed to express something. And it always heard me out. If I look at music as a person, it's the only thing that's always heard every detail of everything I've ever wanted to share. So I think it's ultimately my biggest coping mechanism.
But music means more to Bajat.
For me, music began as a very personal expression kind of thing, where I wanted to be able to grow and share what I felt. And the way that it became a bigger thing than that was kind of not an accident, but I just never saw it coming. It was when I started releasing music and then other kids from like Libya and like, you know, kids who are like refugees and immigrants, and they were reaching out to me like, oh my God, like, I love what you do. Like, I can't believe that someone from where we're from is able to like get on that Spotify playlist or get interviewed by BBC or do this. And I was like, wait, like, this is so much bigger than just me. And I have this distinct memory of this mother from Libya. She had a boy who went to a school and he got bullied a lot for the way that he dressed and the way he carried himself. And she reached out to me with the sweetest message. And she said, I just want to tell you, like, my son is going through all of these things, but when I saw that there was someone like you out in the public, it empowered me as a mother to still allow him to be himself, because I see that he's not alone. And that was the moment where I thought, like, wow, like, that alone makes me feel like I can leave Earth saying that I've done something.
You know how powerful it can be and how it really can inspire and uplift and help others. So in that vein, what advice would you offer to someone that's gone through similar experiences?
Yeah, I think my advice to anyone who is struggling is to share how they feel, to find an outlet, like a way to express themselves, whether through art, sports, or music, to find a support system that could be a parent, a brother, or if you are not in a family that is supportive, then, you know, a therapist or an online friend, and just sharing how you feel, because through my life experience, I realized that bottling feelings and thoughts up is what makes them explode in our head. If you let it go, if you let it out, it's not going to do as much damage as it does when it stays in your head and it goes around and goes around and goes around and it explodes and then it stains your brain. And then another one comes in and it goes around and it explodes and it stains your brain. Through writing music, I realized I can just like let them out, and you let them out of your system. And sometimes you come across words of wisdom that change your outlook on them. Sometimes you just need to let them go so that you can go about your day.
You've had so many struggles for such a young person. What gave you hope?
I think what gave me hope was, you know, being someone who's an observer, I always like to take metaphors from nature and life. I always saw that when there is a day that's cloudy and dark and stormy, that it doesn't stay that way forever. I think me being forced into these tough situations has taught me that we are capable of adapting so much more than we give ourselves credit for. So it really did give me hope when I saw these things. And also, I think just having a vision, having a goal, a destination I wanted to get to. I had a, you know, passion for music, and I knew I wanted to do it full time. And when you have something in the future that you're kind of pointing your compass towards, and then you're kind of on that journey, it doesn't matter if the terrain is a bit rough one day, because you know that this is not where you want to stay. You're going somewhere. And that's what I did when we fled from Libya to Malta. And then that's what I did when I decided to backpack and go to Sweden and just try and build a music career there without knowing anyone, without having ever lived by myself before, going to the north of Sweden where it was minus 30 Celsius. And it was always that same intuition where I knew that I had a destination I wanted to get to, and I was willing to withstand, you know, the tough days, because I knew that these tough days were not my everyday life. It was just the ups and downs that lead you to where you want to go.
So how do you define success? And do you feel like you're successful at this point in your life? You still have more to do. I don't really like the word success. I kind of like the word fulfillment more.
I think a lot of people always, once they succeed and reach their dream life, they always say like, man, like the best times were the hustling times. Like when we were going through it, when we were trying to get there. So in my head, like, you know, I define success in different ways. There is, I think, success, of course, as an artist, you always have goals. Like, I want to tour, you know, these countries, and I want to reach this many people. I want to, you know, win a Grammy. I want to do all these things. And I think that's like one part of life, but it shouldn't be the defining, you know, success that you look at in life. Because I think the ultimate success is waking up and saying, I am a better person today than I was yesterday. And that's kind of what I'm trying to hold myself accountable to. You know, it's a daily struggle, even for me, like even saying these words, like I need to learn to get better at applying them myself, because I do hold myself very, you know, harshly to my goals, like career-wise and stuff. But I think when I go home and I'm with my family and we're able to put food on the table and we're kind of eating and talking and reflecting upon life, like there's nothing more fulfilling than that.
Getting Through is made possible with the support of USC Hillel through the Bradley Sonnenberg Wellness Initiative. It's produced by Hannah Beal, Victorian Moulier, and me, Andrea Sonnenberg. Original music by Micah Smith. Thank you for listening.